Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday Community Conversations with your hosts, Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. I'm Phil. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Phil. I'm Julie.
Hey, and we are still recording these and then playing them in the regular morning show slot. So by now, by the time people hear this, it will be March. And March seems to be coming in like the lion with a bit of snow here at the end of February.
Yes, it certainly does, Phil. As we're interviewing a few days before the listeners will be hearing, we've got snow falling. It's just stopped. And I have to say, it's quite lovely. And I'm looking forward to some Nordic skiing in the valley. How about you?
Yeah, I hope there's enough snow to groom down at some of the trails low elevation, but we will see.
Yes, we will see. It might melt away quickly. Yes, I know it. Spring is coming. February is coming to an end. And I'm looking forward to summer. And summer brings with it some interesting things, such as programs with the Master Naturalists, Idaho Master Naturalists, and those are our guests today. And having said that, I'd like to introduce our two guests today, Pat Myers. Hello, Pat.
Hello.
Good to have you. And Mary Haley. Hello, Mary.
Good afternoon or morning.
Yes, whichever it is. And welcome. You're both board members for the Idaho Master Naturalists.
Yes.
So if you've listened to us before, you'll know that we like to learn a little bit about our guests before we launch into the topic. So if you would do this for us, please tell us something about yourselves and how you came to be in Sandpoint. Also, how you got involved with the Pondere chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalists. Let's start with you, Mary.
Well, I was raised up in North Idaho and then spent 30 years in exile in southeastern Idaho. And that's where I became a master naturalist down in 2012. So I learned a lot about sage grouse and rattlesnakes and am happy to forget those things. And then when we moved up here in retirement, we joined this chapter.
So how long have you been up here?
This is 7 years, so, or six and a half, whatever. I'd like to expand it, so I'll round up.
Good. Well, that's always nice, too. And Pat, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I was born in Newport, so I'm a local originally. Grew up there, Coeur d'Alene in the Sandpoint area, Rapid Lightning Creek. High school spent in the Spokane area. After college, I spent most of my adult career working in Houston in the oil and gas industry. In the early 90s, my wife and I decided to retire up here, so we bought some property and we built on it in 2016 and moved at the end of that year after retiring from the business in Houston. And in 2018, I joined. I actually went to the Kokanee spawning class that the Master Naturalist did at the end of 2017. And that got me interested. And I joined the classes for the following year. And I've been the education chair for this is my third year being education chair.
Very good. So that's good background. You've both been involved for a while with the Master Naturalists and have had a long time helping out in various ways. Mary, can you tell us something about the organization, the Idaho? It is the, as I've said, the Pondere chapter of Idaho Master Naturalists. Tell us about the group. What is its history and the mission, et cetera?
Well, our major sponsor is Fish and Game. And up here, Fish and Game had this wonderful facility that locals know as the Old Fish Hatchery. And they were looking to make it into an educational facility. And the Master Naturalists had chapters in other parts of the state. We are all volunteers. They are our major sponsor, but we are an independent volunteer organization of them that do many different things. But the first thing the Pondere chapter did was create the Water Life Discovery Center, which is out on Lakeshore Drive. And we have third grade field trips out there. And in the summertime, it is open 4 or 5 days a week. It has the old house is been recreated. Well, your listeners can't see it, but he's actually in it. So that interesting stuff behind him is the Water Life Discovery Center. There's a little beaver there for him.
Oh, he's picking up the beaver.
Great, great place for elementary age kids in the summertime. It's got a great pond out there. We put with COVID, we didn't open the house, but we did orienteering and water testing, things that you could do outside in the facility. So that's how we got started, but that is not where we've stayed. We do many things with many different organizations. We are a well-educated, scientifically based, educated volunteer pool. So the U of I has picked us up. For instance, I have dropped little baking soda bombs on invasive clams in March in the water in the Hope Bay, from iNaturalists and bird counts and squeezing fish and then educational things. So we do many different.
Yeah, I have to say, and so when I'm broadcasting on KRFY, I usually don't have my Friends of Scotch and Peaks hat off. But for the moment, I'm going to put it on and just give a shout out to the Master Naturalists for all the wonderful support that the volunteers have given to the Friends organization, as well as many other community conservation organizations, everything from helping out with citizen science to outreach activities. And we have a big community of folks in Bonner County and a big need for volunteers. And the Idaho Master Naturalists are always there with the contribution of volunteer hours. So I want to thank you all publicly, first of all, on the radio, and make sure you let all your members know we appreciate it.
Yes.
We certainly enjoy Scotchman's Peak, and we have several very dedicated trail builders.
Yes. And folks who come out to help with the Mountain Goat Ambassador Program, and when we were doing weed monitoring and our multi-species baseline, also known as the Rare Forest Carnivore Initiative, right at the heart of all those natural resource initiatives are the Master Naturalists.
Okay. Well, this is good to know about. And Mary, you've told us about where you are and a bit about some of the projects that you're doing. But I'd like to back up just a bit and ask you to tell us what are the Master Naturalists? What are they as a group? Define them for us.
Well, most people are familiar with Master Gardeners. And so in the Master Gardener program, you get 40 hours of education, then you volunteer, and you become the masters of organization, the masters of taking that tomato plant or the flower and making it grow in a magical way. I'm a rotten gardener. So we are the masters of disorganization. So we go out and we look at how nature does it. And don't try to organize her. We just try to study her or teach about her or get kids out in her, you know, but we're, it is semi alike the gardeners in that you must have 40 hours of education when you join. And then we ask our members to do 40 hours of volunteer work. And then every year after that, we ask for 8 hours of continuing education and then the 40 hours of volunteer work. And if you don't do that, we don't do anything to you, but except that first 40 hours, man, we really work on that one. And that's Pat.
Well, that's good to know, because I hate to go to any kind of nonprofit jail if I don't do my volunteer work. Nobody likes that. But I'd also like to know a little bit more about the way you're organized, because it sounds like there's a lot of education and a lot of volunteering. So how do y'all organize yourselves?
Well, I'm the president and for this year, and we have a board. So typical president, secretary, treasurer, Pat. Then we have committees. Pat is in charge of the educational committee, and it doesn't just reach the new people. He also opens up many of the classes, like the one that got him interested, to the public. So there is the educational aspect of it that he's in charge of. The Waterlife Discovery Center has a committee. We also have a citizen science committee, so that when somebody like Scotchman's Peak contacts us and says, hey, we've got a trail building day, we get it out to all of our members. We have people that work on the outside of the Waterlife Discovery Center area. So, we primarily work. We have a board meeting once a month that is open to everyone. And we do a lot of emailing and phoning and saying, hey, this is coming up. Let's go out.
Yeah. Well, Pat, let's go to you for a moment. And can you tell us how what does it take to actually become a master naturalist? Do you need to be a scientist?
No, you just need to be kicking. People who want to join us are people generally interested in nature. We have a lot of retirees. Many of our new members that join each year have either a full-time or part-time job, but they can still join and get the education and volunteer credit. The probably the best way, if someone is interested, is just to contact us by email, which is imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. And from there, we'll reply to that, send a bunch of information out about our chapter, about what Master Naturalists are, some links to our schedules, things like that. So it will be a $65 fee for new members this year. And we ask people to fill out a volunteer form as well to make sure we're covered for media events and things like that. But other than that, it's just be interested in outdoors and conservation efforts and restoration projects. Anything that's enhancing nature is what we're looking for.
So that's how folks sign up. And we know, and we want to hear a little more about the volunteer hours that you track to fulfill obligations. Is there a core curriculum they go through, or do they select from a menu of classes and activities? What's the actual becoming of the skill set look like?
We have a core curriculum that the state has that everybody has access to. It's on our chapter website. And we ask people, all the new members, to read through that or at least skim through it. Some of the portions are not that relevant to North Idaho, but there's, you know, they cover all the plants and animals, entomology, geology, you know, all kinds of topics. And what we try to do with our classes is get classes that line up with the core curriculum. And if you want, I can go through that now, or we can talk about it a little later when we go into more details with the class schedule. But we try to make sure that we do things that are relevant to the core curriculum. And if it's not, if it's, say, it's a gardening thing, we say, okay, you can, if that's a class that somebody's offering online or in person, then that would be through Master Gardeners or the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society rather than us. So we try to just limit our classes that we arrange to core curriculum classes.
So it's a bit like going back to college or maybe even some high schools where there's certain required classes everyone takes, and then you have some electives that other folks do?
Well, not really. You know, I guess we could do that, but since every part of the class, of our class schedule, relates to the core curriculum, we have, this year we have about 40 classes that we will do, that we will organize and put on. And we have on our class schedule about 35 classes that other organizations will do that people can get their education credit for that's relevant to us as well. People, as Mary mentioned, they only need 40 hours of education, and our events are typically averaging about an hour and a half a piece. So they only need about 25 of our classes to get enough hours to certify. So they don't have to take all of them. We really want them to take the first weekend classes that talks about how we're organized. It introduces them to the Master Naturalists and some other related events such as the iNaturalist program. But beyond that, it's kind of, if they can make it, they pick the ones they want, because everything's core curriculum. They only need 40 hours, and there aren't any specific classes other than the opening ones that we want them to be sure that they attend.
Okay, so if I understand it right, if you're a person who wants to become an Idaho Master Naturalist and you're just fascinated by moths, maybe you don't have a million moths class, but you might have an area of interest and you can focus on that and become a Master Naturalist. Yes?
It's almost what we're teaching is, or part of it is, how to think, how to have a scientific bent. And science is as infinite as the universe. So you can't learn everything, not even close. So if somebody is fascinated with birds, and that is going to be really where they're going to go, and maybe they don't go to the entomology class, you know, the world does not fall apart, although birds eat bugs. But, you know, it's more, how do I look at the world in a way that questions and is open to understanding and doesn't walk in going, I know all the answers?
I love that. Phil, who wouldn't want to be able to pursue their area of interest and get a certification for that in the natural world? I love that.
That, and it sounds like that's why there are so many people involved. Yeah. What a great opportunity. So I think, Patrick, you mentioned going into some greater detail about the programs and events. So maybe this is a good time to do that.
Yes, I'll just summarize a bit. We have a schedule that's a 4-page long, pretty small font. I'll just summarize. We have 3 classes this year we're going to be doing about mammals. We have 12 classes about plants. Some of the classes on our schedule are by other organizations. We get the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society does monthly talks, and they're going to do several of those as well, including one this weekend. But we're going to do 8, and there are 4 others there. We're going to have 4 on birds and bats, a couple on entomology. We have 6 on ice age floods and geology. We'll have 10 about watersheds and water systems. We're going to have 3 on fisheries. We'll have 3 others that are kind of miscellaneous, introduction to Master Naturalists and anthropology. And then we have, as I mentioned, we'll have a lot of classes by other organizations that fall in the core curriculum that would work for us, that we just let our class members know that they're available and they can join those if they want. Some of those cost, our classes are all free for our members. Some of those other classes might have a fee to them. Where possible, I've actually on our schedule, we've got maybe a page and a quarter of classes by other organizations starting in January before we actually do our first official class that we put on. And what I've been doing in our schedule is if it's a past class and it was free, then it's been posted somewhere on a YouTube or another organization's Facebook page or something. And I'm putting the link in there to the class so that if anybody missed it live, they can catch up with it and watch it at their leisure. And I think that's what's going to happen with a lot of our new members this year, that they might want to go back and see some of those other events that other organizations put on, and they can get some additional education credit right off the bat that way.
Yeah, good.
This is a very exciting year because we're hoping that the state Master Naturalist Rendezvous will be held in Sandpoint, which will be the second weekend of September. And we will have a lot of amazing classes for the all of the state coming up here. So we're going to have, you know, a cruise and all kinds of exciting things for the Master Naturalists, for the regular as well as the new ones.
So how big is the rendezvous? Tell us a little bit more about that. When I hear rendezvous, I think of the old Mountain Men in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, or the Boy Scout Jamboree or something like that.
I wish it was that big. It's not. But we will be at the U of I SOAC facility, the organic old apple orchard facility out. And usually somewhere between 45 and 60 people come up. And they're the most excited of all the master naturalists. So they will travel from around the state. And I'm very excited to show off North Idaho because, like I said, when I became a master naturalist, I learned a lot about rattlesnakes. And there's a lot of trees and things up here that they haven't seen before.
So a couple questions to follow up there. First, and a real quick one is, when is the rendezvous scheduled for?
It is the second weekend of September. And let me glance at my calendar so I can tell you specifically. It is for the Master Naturalists. You know, if we can, we will open some up, but typically this is for the organization. People will come in on the Thursday, the 9th, and Friday and Saturday will be the main days, and then out on Sunday morning. And we have Jack Nesbitt is going to be speaking. We are going to take the Shaughnessy out to actually look the Clark Fork Delta and the Ice Age flood where it happened. So we've got a lot of really wonderful field trips as well as.
So are the field trips for education and enjoyment, or are there any working field trips? Are they going to go out and collect data for anything?
Will I go over that?
Yep.
Yeah, we have on the Saturday the 11th, we're going to have four parallel field trips. So people can choose which of the ones they want to go to. And each of the field trips is typically two stops. We're going to start at about 8 a.m. and try to be back by 3 for the evening events, afternoon and evening events. An example is the field trip one is we're going to go to the Trestle Creek and observe the kokanee spawning. Then we're going to go to the Ross Creek cedars. So it's mainly just education. We don't really have anything planned. There's one of the field trips is going to go to do a geology stops along the Ponderay River, where we have the 1.5 billion year old rocks there around the Cleed. And then we're going to go up to the west side of Priest Lake, where Hager Lake is. And one of our members, Derek Antonelli, has headed up a study in the past, and we're going to go there on that second stop on that field trip to see kind of a peat bog area. It's a little lake, but it's got a spongy bog around it with plants that are unique to that area and you won't find anywhere else in Idaho because of its, we don't have very many peat bogs lying around Idaho. So it's gonna be a fun kind of a thing to do. And so on Thursday, or the the day before, most of our classes are going to be a presentation about those stops for the field trips. So we expect that the people who select a certain field trip will select the class that will be a preliminary information about that particular field trip.
I think that Saturday, if I'm remembering right, is the same Saturday that the Chafe ride is moving to, the Saturday the 10th or 11th, whatever it is. So anyway, just forewarned, there'll be a lot of bicyclists moving about the same loop that some of these field trips are going on. Highways are open, but it's just always a good thing to know to watch for the many cyclists out there.
Well, I'm surprised they
don't want them. We don't want them. We don't want the. I was just going to say we don't want the master naturalists mowing over the Chafe riders. That would be a headline.
Yeah,
maybe we can just take all of our people go on the field trips, have them ride their bikes.
There you go.
Here we go. So that really sounds exciting, your annual meeting, and that it could be up in the Panhandle. It almost makes me want to take the classes now so that I can join that. Maybe I will do so. I'd like to get back just for a moment and talk about the involvement with Idaho Fish and Game. Mary, you touched on it in the beginning, but how exactly do you work together, and how do they influence the Master Naturalists? I know they're your sponsor.
That's a really good question. They were the organizing core initially. So they pulled us together, and there are other Master Naturalist programs in other states. So we didn't initiate it. But Sarah Falk is our Boise contact. And so she watches, you know, the hours they have. If you go to the Idaho Fish and Game website, that's where you're going to find our website, our information. That's where we put in our educational and volunteer hours. And so they are kind of the structure that supports us. So for instance, the rendezvous, we get to do the fun stuff. We get to plan the classes and where are we going to stay and where are we going to eat. And Sarah gets all the money and pays the bills for that. You know, we're paying in too, but you know, it's, we don't have to do that because we have the structure of Fish and Game. We are though independent of Fish and Game. So Fish and Game may make a decision that some of our members don't appreciate. We will not speak out as Master Naturalists, but we are all individuals and we are not employed by Fish and Game. So they are our support system, but we are all independent people of Fish and Game. So, on the other hand, for instance, let's talk about COVID. When we had, you know, lockdowns and things for COVID-19, we could not, say, open the facility in an unsafe fashion that was against what the state had outlined. We wouldn't have anyway, but, you know, it's their property. So we pay attention to that.
Yeah, it sounds like they're basically your kind of your administrators, and you appreciate it very much because it allows you to get out and do the fun stuff. That's perfect. Yeah. Patrick.
Just to add to what Mary was saying, one of the things that the Fishing Game does is provide us with bluebird boxes made out of cedar. And it's a fundraiser for us. We get them free. They put them together in their parking lot area, I think at the fairgrounds, typically in Coeur d'Alene. And then they send up a truckload with a pallet full of bluebird boxes. And we'll have typically a couple times a year, we will have bluebird box sales, which also work great for the tree swallows because they're cavity nesters as well. And it gives it some extra revenue. We do have a one person from the IDFG office in Coeur d'Alene is our kind of our primary coordinator sponsor person. Pete Gardner has been doing that for many years, and he's just retired. A new person will be named shortly, and they work with us directly, typically attending our board meetings and coming to other events that we do. And the other thing that Fish and Game really helps with is they are instructors for a lot of our classes. They have a lot of biologists who help out, and they're very, very happy to help us out when we want to do a topic on something, on mammals or birds or whatever it is. So they're very, very helpful for us.
It sounds like a great partnership, really. One of those ideal things, the way that the state government and citizens can work together. And I think it's exemplary. Do you know, and if this is something that is unique to Idaho, or is this a similar model being used in some of our neighboring states?
A similar model has been used in other states. I can't tell you what they are, but I don't think Idaho started this. The other thing that we do, Fish and Game is very financially unusually structured. They are only supplied, their money supplied is totally based off of licenses, fishing and hunting licenses. That's it. The state does not pony into them. So our volunteer hours, which they track, can be used as matching funds for different grants. So a lot of projects, especially non-fish and game, non-game type projects, can be granted and funded because of our work. And not just our work with Fish and Game, but our work with other places too, primarily with Fish and Game. But it allows them to function at a much higher level than just the funding that they receive from licenses.
I wanted to go back to the Water Life Discovery Center. I know we're living in the time of COVID and everybody is Zooming, but Master Naturalists spend time there. Tell us a bit more about that.
We do. And one thing is, if you love the outdoors and you love kids, you don't necessarily have to be building trails. You don't have to be an incredible physical fit specimen. The Water Life Discovery Center, you spend 4 hours there. And as families come in, you answer questions. You show them, you know, the different things that we have, like orienteering. Encourage them to use the facility. So that's 4 or 5 days every summer. And so that is our core, why we started. But there is that educational piece. Not only do we do that, but the third grade field trips are at the Water Life Discovery Center, plus many of us, like Gail Bolin actually has run for many years, the water festival out in Laclede. So many of us help out with that. So if you are a retired teacher, you just love education, there is that aspect of it that is a little less physical.
Yeah, more of an indoor situation. If people can't get outdoors or can only spend a short time outdoors, this is a nice alternative where they can help out kids and help others understand what's happening. It's a beautiful location.
It is beautiful. It's public land right on the river. A lot of people use it for picnics and anything that gets kids out. We have fish in the pond that used to come up to the window when you throw food in. We haven't trained them yet.
So many times when we're talking about the Water Life Discovery Center, we're focusing on the facilities that are just to the northeast of the road by the lake. But half the property is on the other side with that nice little nature walk loop through there.
Yeah, beautiful nature walk. And it's especially in the spring, you'll see a lot of the wetland type plants coming up. So it is a beautiful facility. And we have hopes to expand it someday. I would love to do a little bit of a bird walk. So stay tuned.
Well, Julie, I think we need to talk about the City Nature Challenge. We just heard a lot about that last week, and I think that set us up nicely for this conversation today with the Master Naturalists.
Yes, I think so. Pat, As I understand it, there's a connection between the Master Naturalists and the upcoming City Nature Challenge. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, some of our members are involved with the organization of that. It's kind of a bio blitz. It's being planned for April 30th to May 3rd, where people take pictures in the county. And then the days after that, for I think another 5 days, posted on iNaturalist, where all the plants and animals you're taking pictures of are identified. And it'll be just a way to kind of see what is out there in nature, both plants and animals. So we have... Mary's husband, Dan, is going to be doing a class for us early on the use of iNaturalist, online website where you can post pictures of things and have people identify it down to the species name as well. And he's planning on doing a public class on iNaturalist prior to the Nature Challenge getting started, so that people know how to use it. If they want to join up. And we're going to encourage all of our members to participate, and we'll help in whatever way we can.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems to me that would be the most challenging part of the City Nature Challenge, whereas for folks that maybe don't get out in nature that often, the learning the app might be the easy part, and understanding what's out in nature might be the hard part. So there could be challenges on both sides. Yeah.
Well, the wonderful thing about iNaturalist is that you put it on there and then the experts will help you. So you put it on there and say, I think this is a grand fir. And somebody like Chris Schnuff will look at it and say, oh yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah, and that's really so important. One of the things that's recently happened is the Great Backyard Bird Count, where folks send in photos of their observations. And a good friend of mine, I won't name the state or region, is one of the folks who reviews that. And he was saying this year there was an upswell of way more contributions than ever before, and a larger percentage of misidentifications too, because so many people are excited and they're new, and that's great, but there is a value in that review process.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, I'm excited and looking forward to that event here at the end of April. As we come to the end of our interview, are there any events that we should be aware of with the Master Naturalists that the public or members would want to be sure to put on their calendars?
Well, the biggest one is Pat's classes, which start March 26th. So it is an awful fun group. I mean, I guess those two words don't really go together, but it is a very fun group. And if you would like to get together with people who love the outside and you are a hungry learner, Pat's classes are amazing. I have been a Master Naturalist now for 8 years, and I thoroughly enjoy sneaking in to the many different classes he's got.
Yep, Pat, go ahead.
I just wanted to add to that, you know, we're going to have an annual lunch on May 14th. Because we are still in the COVID pandemic, we plan on having an outdoor lunch at the Waterlife Discovery Center with all of our new members meeting our existing members. And there'll be some certificates handed out for people who have recertified for the year and hit some volunteer our milestones. And then, of course, the rendezvous, we've been planning on having that in September, and hopefully we'll be able to actually do that. If everybody gets, enough people get vaccinated, we can get people to come up here and join us. In the Master Naturalist chapters in the state, there are 9 of them. The closest one to us is in Lewiston, and the next one down is McCall, and all the rest are in Southern Idaho. So this would be quite a drive for most of the people in the state who want to come visit us.
Yeah, that's quite a journey. And, you know, it's interesting, both Phil and I are associated with the Idaho Trails Association, and we'll have trail projects up here in the Panhandle. We'll get folks from South Idaho, and often it's their first visit to the Panhandle, and they're so excited to get up here. So hopefully that will happen, and you'll get some people that will be excited to see this part of the state.
These kinds of events can be great exposure. So before we wrap up, one more time, contact information or directions to resources for how folks can find out more about the Master Naturalist program and classes.
Shall I do that, Mary?
Yep.
If anybody's interested, just send an email to imn.sandpoint@gmail.com. Let us know you're interested in joining the classes, and we will send you a plethora of information about us, including how to send your dues in, where to send it to, and that sort of thing. I guess one wrap-up comment I'd like to make is we are really lucky in this part of the state to have so many other organizations with like minds to what we are. I did a count for our instructors, and we have instructors for our classes from over 20 different organizations, as well as some retired private individuals. And that doesn't even count the classes that other organizations will be doing where they can get credit. So just the classes that we're putting on, we have instructors from more than 20 different organizations. So we are really lucky to have that, and really appreciate that everybody is willing to help us out in training our members in whatever topic they're experts on.
So much you can learn about the natural world from experts here in the Idaho Panhandle. It is truly a resource, and it's important that we spread the information to the community, because you're a gem in the community, and we thank you for joining us today to tell us about that. Thank you both. I'm going to conclude. Yes, and I want to thank Mary Haley and Pat Myers for joining us from the Idaho Master Naturalist Pondere Chapter, and you've been here with us today on KRFY Community Conversations. This will be aired Tuesday morning. You'll be listening to it on Tuesday morning. Thank you for joining us.
Well, this wraps up another Community Conversation. Thanks for tuning in to KRFY 88.5 FM. Listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org, and all of our community conversation shows are later posted as podcasts and available on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Even as vaccinations roll out, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at significant levels across our country, our county, our state, and our region. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses. Keep a 6-foot distance apart. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible. And stay home if you are sick. If we all help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Before we close, we have a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to find out more information about the song you just heard, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page. Once there, find the playlist link, and then you can see the name of the song and the artist who performed it. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.